Each and every decision you've made in your life has had an impact, shaped you into the person you are today. But what if I told you that there exists a universe for each of those choices, where things turned out differently? This may be a mere theory in our world, but within the realms of comic books, science fiction, or fantasy, it is a reality that holds infinite wonders and horrors. Either way, they make for some good storytelling. So come with us as we talk about the events occurring now and in the future. Let us discuss the state of the multiverse. Hello, everybody, and welcome to State of the Multiverse. I am your host, Reese, and it's been a while since the last episode. Just over 2 years, in fact. Sorry about the absence. I will explain everything in due time, but first of all, if you're a new listener here, welcome to State of the Multiverse, and I'm very glad to have you here. Hopefully we can get you invested into this show and get some more listeners. And for the previous listeners, I'd like to thank you for sticking with the show and for the number of you that gave me some words of encouragement to come back, letting me know that there is indeed an audience for the show. Hopefully we can keep that group growing. So, a lot of you are probably wondering where I've been since the last episode, which was all the way back in November of 2019, believe it or not. Well, a lot's kind of happened since then. I'm sure we're all aware of the world situation, but I will get into my little part of that in due time. But ultimately, I think I should just start off with why I haven't been making episodes, because God knows we've had the time and in all these lockdowns and stuff like that, but I'll get into that. I had an episode that I was working on for a while before all of this, and it was in my drafts for quite a while, and I was up. It was back when I did the show the last time. I used to, for those of you who don't know, I would do lists of updates of news and stuff like that for Marvel, DC, films, all this type of stuff. And it got to the point where pretty much all of what I had done was more or less out of date, and I didn't really want to keep doing that. And frankly, keeping up with all the news, it's a bit tiring, you know, and like that's not even, you know, this is the comic book stuff, you know, that which should be interesting, but at the end of the day, it was, you know, getting a bit far behind. But if I'm really being honest, the reason I didn't sit down and make another episode was I just wasn't invested, really. You know, I wasn't feeling excited about the idea of sitting down and recording a new episode. It probably didn't help that at the time I was just getting into college and was trying to adjust to that new situation. But ultimately, I think it did just come down to just not feeling really much enthusiasm towards it. And I thought that it is better to do something when you are fully interested and fully invested in doing that. So that turned into a bit of a long spell of not really recording anything. But we are back now, and I'm going to do my best to have some sort of consistency with this. I can't promise certain days of the week, but I will try to get a few episodes out a month at the very least. So what have I been up to? I traveled, which was fun, and I did that just before everything kind of went to shit. I lived in Spain for a while, which was cool. I was teaching there, which was a great experience. And just as I got out of Spain and got back to Ireland, everything started shutting down. So that was very well timed. It was a very good experience, and I would definitely do it again. I'd recommend it to anybody. Going to another country and doing all new things. Like I remember one of the days I was just walking around Madrid, just by myself. Like I was there with other people, but like it wasn't people I was terribly familiar with. So that feeling of just walking around in another country where you don't know anybody, it's daunting, But it's actually, in terms of personal growth, that's really interesting. It's really cool. But yeah, obviously eventually have to come back to dark and dull Ireland, but home is home. And during all this lockdown stuff, because for maybe it's similar in your country, I don't know, but here in Ireland we've had several periods of what are being called lockdowns, and basically can't go anywhere, can't do anything. It's not really that fun. And you'd think with all that stuck at home time that I would have been recording a lot of stuff, but as I said, that just wasn't really the enthusiasm. But now, for the last couple of weeks at this point, I've been putting together an episode bit by bit because I've just really been getting encouragement from fans of this show. And I figured, what the hell? It's time to bring it back, Time to get back into it. So this is going to count as the first half of the return of State of the Multiverse. This episode, we are going to cover stuff that I thought was worth discussing, obviously, but things that within the last, almost 2 years now, or over 2 years since this show was on. But things that I personally really enjoyed and wanted to talk about, whether it be films, television shows, maybe even a couple of games. And then the second half of the episode, which will hopefully be coming out shortly after this one, is going to be things I had problems with. And it's not going to be negative. I'm going to make it as fun as possible. I just think it's things that, for me personally, I think should be addressed in the realms of, science fiction and comic book stuff. So we're gonna have a good time, and let's get into it. Just before we get into that, folks, I just wanted to throw one thing at you guys. I was thinking of, instead of going through stories like I had done previously, like I was going through the Injustice stories, which, while fun to do, ultimately, there's other places you could go for that I think can do a bit more precisely, I guess, or neatly than me. Like, there's YouTube channels that go through these stories. But I was thinking about reading my own stories to you guys and writing them so that I can read them out onto this show. I'd really appreciate it if you guys would give me some input on this, because I want to know if that's something you'd be interested in, or maybe should I do a different show for that and keep the two things separate. So on the Instagram page at State of the Multiverse, I'm going to be sharing some polls that I hope you will give me some of your input on. So at State of the Multiverse on Instagram, and then if you're listening to this at a later date, I will be answering messages if you want to send me your response to this, and I will get back to you on that, and I'll weigh up what people say and we'll make a decision about that. But do you want to hear my stories read out on this podcast or other things like that? Or would you prefer for this to be exclusively talking about pop culture stuff like Marvel, DC, etc.? Please let me know in the poll on Instagram or send me a message. Thank you. Let's get into the fun part of this episode now. Were you or a loved one insulted by the 2017 Justice League film? Well, if you were like me, you much preferred the Snyder Cut. I'm just kidding, this isn't an infomercial. I'm just going to talk about the Snyder Cut for a little bit. Zack Snyder's Justice League, what I personally consider one of the greatest comic book films ever made. I love Marvel, I really do. I grew up with characters like Spider-Man, the Hulk, the X-Men. But when it comes down to it, I believe I'm a DC fan at heart. I feel like they have a lot more interesting stories, a lot more iconic stories. And their characters, despite, some people saying that they're not relatable, I think if you look past the superficial elements of the characters, I think there's absolute wealth of material to go through. And Zack Snyder's Justice League, even if we do not get a, restore the Snyder cut, or restore the Snyder verse, I should say, that people want, I think it's probably the way to leave it off. Almost like Daredevil season three. Like, we want more, but if it's going to end somewhere, it's better to end where it was. And the Snyder cut, well, how else do you describe it? It's an epic. It is fantastic. It is what DC fans deserve for the most part. You know, it's the vision of a single director, no studio meddling. It is, and granted, Zack did add things while finishing the film. Like, the entire nightmare sequence was filmed in his back garden, like in his backyard. It was insane that he, like, because Warner Brothers told him, you're not allowed to film anything else. And of course, he says in an interview, I definitely film stuff, you know? But yeah, for a fan of DC, it was a 4-hour masterpiece. It's not without flaws, for sure, but in terms of escalating stakes, you know, like forming the team, all this type of stuff. And not only that, it builds and pays off what Zack set up in Man of Steel and Batman v Superman and stuff like that. So I'd challenge any DC Comics fan to watch this film and not have fun. A couple of times, you know, I was getting quite emotional watching it, because for me, these characters are ones that I'm very invested in, even if I don't always like how they're portrayed in media. Like, say, for example, with Ezra Miller's Flash. Didn't really like him in the 2017 film. I didn't mind him, but I didn't like how every line that he had was supposed to be comic relief. You know, you kind of have to have more to a character than that. But certain moments, like with the Flash, for example, when he enters the Speed Force and runs reality backwards to restore the Earth that they had just lost, with that fantastic score by Junkie XL, or Tom Hulkenberg, I think that's how you pronounce his name. It is absolutely amazing. And then obviously Superman or Clark's journey back to the world of the living is great as well. And a lot of people were concerned about not having Hans Zimmer on for the score, which, while initially I was concerned as well myself when I heard that it wasn't going to be Hans, Tom Hulkenberg, I think it's, again, I'm apologies if I butcher his name, when he released a video on the same day as the announcement of the Zack Snyder's Justice League being released, and it was a sample of his Justice League theme, I was blown away. Faith 100% put into this man. He delivered on every level for what he was supposed to do. The theme, the crew at High Power, or High Tower, yeah, it's High Tower. That is, even without the connection to a superhero film, that is a fantastic piece of music. And I actually ended up using that piece of music in a tribute to DC that I put on my one of my Instagram pages, which I will get into later on. I will give you the name of that. For now, just it's Reese at Reese O'Connor Images. That is my name. But yes, back to the actual discussion of the Zack Snyder's Justice League. I think it warrants an episode of its own, because it's a lot. But for me, it was finally getting to see the greatest superhero team to ever exist on screen. The Justice League finally done justice. You know that meme where there's a guy with a mustache and a superhero costume screaming, "Think, Mark, think"? Well, that's actually based off of an animated series. And that animated series is based off of a fantastic comic book called Invincible. Invincible was created by Robert Kirkman and Cory Walker, and was illustrated for the most part by Ryan Otley as the series went on. It spanned 15 years and 144 issues, and is easily in my top 10 series of all time, maybe top 5. It's funny, the more I think about it, I'm like, no, it's probably just always creeping higher to being my top. It's definitely one of my all-time favorites for sure. When I picked up the first compendium in a comic book shop earlier on this year, I think it was, yeah, I was, I think it was around January, February. I was aware of the initial plot twist, but I had no idea how balls to the wall crazy the series was. Like I knew it was violent, I knew it was more mature, but I got into it because I knew there was a beginning and an end. Kind of like why I like Hellboy, because there's an eventual stop, and then you can kind of just do in between type stories. But with Invincible, it's, you know, issue one all the way up to issue 144, because it spanned 15 years. It started in 2003 and ended in 2018, I think. It was created by Robert Kirkman and Cory Walker, who was the original artist. Robert Kirkman, who you might know for The Walking Dead or Outcast and things like that. But for the majority of the 15 years, it was illustrated by Ryan Otley. And that kind of put him on the map for sure. He's done stuff like Spider-Man since. I love this series. I talked about it non-stop while in the middle of it, and I'm still waiting on some people that I know to watch it so I can talk about it more in depth. But also at the same time, there's a picture that goes around of the three compendiums stacked on top of each other, and there's a blue like bookmark where the show leaves off, and it's barely scratching the surface. So granted, they are going to move things around, but thankfully there's two more seasons confirmed on the way. But I think Invincible warrants its own episode so I can talk about it more in depth. Maybe more than one, we'll see, depending on how I want to go about it. But I would say, bar a few things that happen towards the end of the comic book, and then its depiction of the character of Amber in the animated series, it's I don't I'd say near perfect, because it's just, you know, it's got a beginning, it's got an end. There's so many twists and turns. You really can't talk about it and do it justice without talking about spoilers. But for now, I'm just gonna mention some of the characters and some of the casting, which was very good. But characters like Mark, who is obviously the main guy, Invincible, his father, Omni-Man or Nolan, his mom, Debbie, Eve, Rex, Amanda, Oliver, Alan the Alien, all these characters very quickly became near and dear to my heart. And the casting is just fantastic overall. Like, whilst one or two of them wouldn't be exactly how I would have thought the characters would have sounded, I'm not going to deny they did a good job. For me, some of the highlights were for Omni-Man, it was J.K. Simmons, J. Jonah Jameson himself. For Adam Eve, it was Gillian Jacobs. She is fantastic as Eve. And surprisingly, Walter Goggins, who some people might know from Sons of Anarchy, was a Deadwood, or what, he was in one of those type of shows. I haven't watched it yet, but I know it's meant to be good. But he's a very good actor, and he was cast as the character of Cecil Stedman, which was a very surprising choice for me. But once I heard his voice from the animated version of the character, that's all I can hear now. Yeah, so I will talk about Invincible more at another time, because we've still got a bunch of other things to get through. But it's a recommend from me for sure, if you get the chance. Next up, we have Titans. This show has been on for 3 seasons, and thankfully is going to get a fourth, and has been very interesting to follow since it came out. The initial season was admittedly trying a bit too hard to be mature and edgy, particularly within the opening episode. It had, you know, Robin saying, "Fuck Batman." But since then, they've really embraced the fact that it's a comic book show and it's based off of a comic book, you know, something that people of all ages read generally. But mainly, I think the show has gotten better, strangely, thanks to the fact that it's just brought on more characters and embraced how crazy it all is, really. Beginning initially in the show with just Robin, Raven, Starfire, and Beast Boy, kind of the people that most people would know. Cyborg isn't in this one. He's over in Doom Patrol, which is also a great show, which I need to really watch the rest of season three because I'm behind. But we had guest appearances from Jason Todd, who was the second Robin, Wonder Girl, who was awesome, Hawk and Dove too, which those two are just great in the show, to be honest. Season two brought in Superboy, Deathstroke, Ravager, Jericho, and an older Bruce Wayne. This show's version of Deathstroke is amazing. Like, I love the one from Arrow. I don't think we've seen enough of the one in the DCEU, but the one on Titans, he looks the part and he sounds the part and he causes a lot of damage. Season three, which recently wrapped up, brought on Scarecrow, Blackfire, who is Starfire's sister, Red Hood, which is the next stage of Jason Todd's character, which is probably most people's favorite stage for that character, and my personal favorite, Barbara Gordon. Barbara Gordon is probably most famous for being Batgirl to like average fans, but people that know her character a bit more are more familiar with the fact that she is Oracle in the comics, which was the persona she took up after, in the very famous storyline, The Killing Joke. Joker paralyzed her, and after that, obviously personal tragedy, she took it upon herself to still take part in fighting crime, but doing it from basically a room with screens and computers, and helping out the Bat family and other characters like the Birds of Prey and stuff like that by, being the tech person and being the smartest one in the room. And she's a fantastic character. I really like, I can't do her justice really just talking about it, but her depiction on the show was very good. And they actually had an actress who unfortunately had lost a leg, but it meant that she was, convincing enough in being a person who had a disability, which is, a lot of people look at the Barbara Gordon character as being actual good representation for people in that predicament who have suffered accidents and stuff, where they're either wheelchair bound or they have to have some sort of an aid to move around. And for me, I thought that was a great way of doing it on the show. How, you know, I should probably also mention that the show does feature a race swapped Tim Drake. I'm not a fan of that, but that's something I'm going to talk about in the next episode when I talk about Tim Drake. The show overall, it's not perfect, but I really enjoy watching it. The characters aren't always the exact way they are in the books, like, say, Dick Grayson, for example, Nightwing. I really enjoy the version of him on the show, particularly in the third season, because he's finally, at least mostly, at that stage of, he's leading the Titans. He is able to have fun. He's not this serious guy who's just been traumatized by Batman from how he was raised in the first season. But yeah, I can't wait for season four. Can't wait to see where it goes, where other characters come into it. Some of my personal favorites are Dick Grayson, Superboy, Deathstroke, Barbara Gordon, Blackfire. She's really cool. Hawk was one of my favorites too. Jason Todd, I really hoped he was going to be better this season as the Red Hood, particularly. But by the end, they made him interesting again, and I'm looking forward to see where it's going to go from here. In case nobody really noticed, but there was this little show called Squid Game. Who am I kidding? Of course you've heard of it. I watched this series a good bit after it had come out, because for me personally, I don't really enjoy watching things like, well, new shows, I guess I could say, while everybody's in the middle of talking about it. Me personally, I'd like to just sit and watch it at my own pace, but my sister convinced me to watch it because she really, really enjoyed it. And it was amazing. It was really, really good. For if you do not know, I really shouldn't assume that everyone has heard of it. The series is a Korean drama about people who are desperate for money, who take part in a win or die series of games. The show didn't really hide the reality of the situation either, which I really respected. it's your favorites really could die at any time, and that does sound cliche, but whatever. And it also, it doesn't have like really unrealistic depictions of characters. Like, obviously it's mean to say so, but a lot of the male characters point out that, especially in the games where it involves physical strength, women on your team or women that are sort of aren't really helpful. But that also means that some of them underestimate the women in the show, because they're not dumb, and they definitely have the upper hand in a lot of the tactical situations, which I definitely thought was cool. The characters are all very well fleshed out. They're definitely layered, and most of all, they're flawed, because these people are all there because they need money, not just because they need to survive. But it's a lot of it is because of their own mistakes, so, or the situations they were forced into. So I think that's good. I'd recommend, you're probably going to hear me say this a lot as well, but there's a guy on YouTube named The Critical Drinker. I'm a huge fan of his. I really think he's a very entertaining guy on YouTube, and he has a great video on the show where he's able to kind of talk about it more. But I think it was in his video, he makes a great point about how so many people were watching this show. It's almost like it doesn't matter about the language, or it doesn't matter about the fact that it doesn't have any identity politics, that it's just a well-crafted show, and apparently it's getting a season two. Let's hope it's good and they don't mess it up. So yeah, if you haven't checked out Squid Game, I'd highly recommend it, and also watch it in Korean. Just read the subtitles. Don't be lazy. The American version, or the English version, I should say, from the clips I've seen, it is nowhere near as good. It takes you out of the experience, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, to watch it however it makes you more invested, I suppose. But yeah, check out Squid Game. Speaking of The Critical Drinker, he's friends with two other YouTube channels that I'm very big fans of, mainly Nerdrotic and Heel versus Babyface. And these two guys, they run their own channels, and I watched them separately initially, and then I discovered that they do shows together, which was like, oh, cool. Yeah, they do The Real BBC, usually on a Wednesday, I think. But they do that with Mahler, but then on a Friday, they have the main event, the grand finale of the week, the Friday Night Tights show. And they're on there with a few other people, and everybody brings something interesting to the table, but they always have good guests on, which really helps. As in, like, for getting new people into the show. They have had Chris Gore, who was a great person to listen to because he just loves talking about movies, and he talks about movies from different countries as well, which is always interesting. They've had Chrissy Mayer, who is now a fantastic new addition to the main lineup because she's awesome. She's really funny. She does great impressions as well. They had Alex Jones on there a while ago. They had Just Some Guy recently. And of course, my personal favorite, The Critical Drinker. I'd really recommend checking out these guys. Check in on one of the live streams. Usually, well, Friday Night Tights, obviously on a Friday, but the Nerdrotic does a few other ones throughout the week. So check out his channel. There's Nerdrotic and Nerdrotic Daily. Yeah, these guys are great. They always make me laugh. It's been good having that kind of weekly thing with kind of how crap the world has been, to say the least. I'm trying to not curse too much. I'll save that for part two. But yeah, no, it's always good listening to those guys, because they always make me laugh. So I think they'd probably make you guys laugh if you like listening to me. So yeah, check them out. Nerdrotic, Heel versus Babyface, and Friday Night Tights. In 2015, I got The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. And safe to say, I was not ready for that game because I was really bad at it. It was just, and it didn't help, I had a really small TV at the time, so I could not read that tiny text for all the instructions. It was very confusing. But in terms of the controls as well, I just wasn't ready for that game, and I was really bad at it every time I tried to play through it. So a couple of years go by, and the Netflix series comes out, and I enjoy the Netflix series, but it was only in the last, couple of months, where I was like, you know what, I'm gonna put on The Witcher. I'm gonna stick with it. And I played through the whole thing, and it was fantastic. And I also watched the animated prequel to the Netflix series called Nightmare of the Wolf. And I'm patiently waiting. It's a couple more weeks now for season two. And I'm kind of what I'm really hoping for with season two is to see Geralt's interactions with the other witchers that we're going to get to see, mainly Vesemir, Eskel, and Lambert. Ciri kind of had the most boring story in season one, and while it wasn't bad, it was just kind of getting her to Geralt at the last episode was really the kind of what they were doing. The first season for me was mainly Yennefer's story, and I was a little bit disappointed at how little Geralt was seemingly in it. Yaskier was great. Yaskier is Geralt's friend, who in the books and games is called Dandelion, but they changed that for the show. Ciri seems to be training in the trailers and stuff and doing some fighting and horseback riding, so that looks like she's gonna have a lot more to do. So between that, the more witchers, more monsters, more fighting, and if the trend continues with the show, more talks about destiny. When all the lockdowns started here, I started editing on my phone, and I found it was quite enjoyable, and it was kind of a good outlet, a good distraction as well. And actually, after doing it for a couple of weeks, I ended up actually using it to help pass my college course at the time, which really came in handy. I still do videos, as I mentioned earlier on with the DC one, and you could find them on Instagram at Rhys O'Connor Images. I do things like, of course, there's Marvel and DC related stuff, but I try and make other things as well, like videos about either characters or specifically the films and shows that they are from. Games too as well. I like to mix it up with lighthearted videos, but I like to, like particularly with stuff like the DC one, or I have a few other ones that are longer videos that I try to put some time and effort in and make them a little bit more serious. Unfortunately, I'm still kind of limited with the stuff I'm using at the moment, and then Instagram sometimes messes with quality as well. But if you guys want to check that out, I'd really appreciate it. Some of the videos that I've done, I've managed to actually get attention from celebrities as well, which was pretty cool. One example was actually for Jupiter's Legacy. Two actors from that liked it. One was Elena Kemporis, I think her name is. She is the actress for Chloe Sampson. She liked it and commented, but as well as that, we had Tyler Mane, who played Blackstar. But for those of you who might not know, Tyler Mane played Sabretooth in the original X-Men. And that was really cool for me because I loved the X-Men movies growing up. And Sabretooth is a character who I've always liked, but he's never really been done right in the movies. X-Men Origins, weirdly enough, had a good version of him, but he's just not since returned. He was meant to have a cameo actually in Logan, but they ended up not going with that. I've also had three actors from Shazam, which was really cool. The both actresses for Darla, and then Mark Strong, who played Dr. Savannah, and I'm a big fan of his. I love his films. They all liked it, which was really cool. So I post on there semi consistently anyway. I generally try to at least do one video a week if possible. I'm in the middle of making a Guardians of the Galaxy video, so hopefully that goes out soon. If that sounds interesting, at Rhys O'Connor Images on Instagram. And up next, we have the Suicide Squad, and this I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was great. It was to me, it was the Suicide Squad film we deserved. Definitely compared to the 2016 one, which I don't really like to say it's David Ayer's film because Warner Brothers, from what everyone can tell, it seems they really messed with it. Hence why a lot of people didn't really seem to like it, but there's probably a few things mixed in with that. This is one of the two films I have been able to see in a cinema during all of this nonsense that we are stuck in the middle of around the world. I thought it was really good. I'm not going to go into like loads of detail, but I'll just mention some things. I think the film is just a great example of what can be done when you let creative people do what they want to do rather than trying to shoehorn it into something else or to, change it to be more marketable. Like The Suicide Squad, it did make a tremendous amount of money from what I know, because it's not for kids. I'm sure people brought their kids to see it and then probably realized their mistake, but the fact that they didn't hold back on the blood or the violence, it works, because at the end of the day, the team is basically, at risk of dying at every single moment, and that's even from the person who runs it, Amanda Waller. But let's get into some of the highlights. Harley Quinn, this is probably my favorite film she's been in as of yet. I don't think she was there too much. Like I thought, because especially if you look at something like Birds of Prey, that is a flawed movie. But I think that's what happens when you just have too much Harley Quinn as well. Like I think she was leveled out enough, and the other characters got time to grow and be introduced also with a lot of them. Bloodsport, played by Idris Elba, who was obviously a stand-in for Deadshot because Will Smith wasn't coming back for this movie. Apparently he still wants to come back and play Deadshot. But Bloodsport was actually really cool. I don't normally like Idris Elba. I think he's a bit of a dick. But I won't deny he's a good actor. His Bloodsport character was really cool, and they got around the idea, because originally this character in the comics, he could make weapons just appear, I guess, because I was never, again, James Gunn likes to pick his obscure characters. I wasn't too familiar with Bloodsport, but they got around that by having weapons made into and hidden throughout his suit, which was a really cool idea. Yeah, he felt distinct personality-wise from Deadshot enough, even though they are both marksmen with daughter troubles, And another point I'll give it to, the character was originally black, which is good. So they kept that consistent instead of race changing a character just to get a bigger actor in there, but that's besides the point. He definitely takes more of a leadership role compared to Deadshot. I think with Deadshot, it just felt like a sad version of Will Smith with some guns. I didn't dislike him as Deadshot, I just didn't think they used him very well. And he the Bloodsport definitely embraces the leadership role more than Deadshot did. Peacemaker, played by John Cena, he was fun for that movie. I have mixed feelings on whether I'm gonna be, tuning in as soon as I can for each episode of his series. I'm thus far unimpressed with the trailers that we've seen, but in the movie, he works. He while some bits are a little bit prolonged, mainly John Cena just standing around in his underwear was a bit stupid, but the actual movie, the way it used Peacemaker, this character who was so devoted to achieving his mission that he will do very morally wrong things, it was really interesting. Because a fun fact, if some of you might not know, Alan Moore's Watchmen, he originally wanted to use characters that were purchased from it was a Charlton Comics, I forget. I'm getting mixed up, but he wasn't allowed to use the characters he wanted, so he based the characters in Watchmen off of the characters he wanted to use. So the comedian was based off of Peacemaker, this uber American, get the job done at any means type character, which I think is really cool. Ratcatcher 2 was good. She was really cool. Polka Dot Man was they made Polka Dot Man interesting, which was something I never would have thought possible. The actor, I don't want to butcher his name. He's always good in DC stuff. And then King Shark was just awesome. Like I was looking forward to that character anyway, but then just, Sylvester Stallone just really played into it, and it definitely worked. I hope to see more from this version of the Suicide Squad in the future, hopefully. The fact that they went out of their way to have Starro the Conqueror as the villain just made it all the more crazy. So hope we see more in the future from that. And I think James Gunn has said that once he's done with Guardians of the Galaxy 3, he is coming back to DC for at least one other project. So looking forward to see what that is. As of recording this, I have watched just over 5 seasons. I'm in the middle of the sixth season of The X-Files, and I've watched the first film as well, which takes place before season six. It was a series that I always wanted to commit to watching, and I just never got round to it for the longest time. And then it became available to me when I got Disney Plus, and I was encouraged by my dad to watch it, and he kept saying to me, "Oh, it's right up your alley." Like I'd seen things from it over the years, and I'd seen the Fluke Man episode was my first thing I ever watched from the show, and I'd seen the second film, which I was shown by a relative, and then I watched the 10th season when it came out with that same person. But I couldn't appreciate what was going on because I didn't know the whole story. But oh my God. If you haven't watched The X-Files, I highly recommend it. Absolutely. I would say it is absolutely better than most things that are on TV today. If you love dark subject matter, it covers that as well. But it also has plenty of lighthearted episodes. But the prolonged story and the twists and turns are phenomenal. It's well worth a watch. I mean, Fox Mulder and Dana Scully, the two protagonists, are two of the most layered and fascinating characters in all of fiction, in my opinion. I really don't think I'm exaggerating when I'm saying that, though. Mulder, he's a guy who looks for the truth in the world, not only for himself, but for everybody else. He wants to get rid of the lies in the world and have everyone be able to see the world as it is, which I think is a very, very interesting motivation and goal, especially considering our current world situation. He can get lost in the midst of that though, and that's where Scully comes in. She's a medical doctor and a very pragmatic woman in the FBI who and she initially I favored Fox as my preferred character, but as the series goes on, I love both characters equally because they each side of my mind goes to each character where, like my want to learn about the mysteries of life and all this sort of things, that definitely is Fox. But then the kind of the realist part of me is Scully, which I think is really cool. It's always great when you can see yourself in characters, and I think that's definitely something we should pay attention to nowadays, because as much as seeing a character that looks like you or has the same condition as you is obviously important to a certain extent, I don't think it's the be all and end all. Looking at characters who go through trials and go through these ups and downs, just because it's not literally what you've been through, I think it's no ex like it's no reason for why you can't relate to that. You can equate it to your own life. So I think watching this series as I go on, it's not only like superbly interesting for a narrative of a series, but also just watching these characters learn and develop and then
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. I'm probably rambling a bit now. I still have a few more seasons to go, obviously, but I could not recommend this series highly enough. Like Mulder goes through these trials of figuring out what's really going on with the world and who is behind certain things, and then Scully has several tests of her faith as a religious person, and also as her with her faith in science and what the limits of science are, and how far past what we know does science go. But yes, they both get tested time and again, which is always a good thing. And they're always there, whether it's murderers, monsters, aliens, or even just a simple man with a cigarette. Go watch The X-Files. One of the writers from The X-Files, actually, he went on to create a little-known show called Breaking Bad. And this is another one I got to during the initial stage of all this lockdown stuff. It was during the first summer lockdown here in Ireland. I finally got around to watching Breaking Bad, and oh my God, did it live up to the hype? Like, granted, some things like the ending were spoiled for me, unfortunately, but the 5 seasons of this show that show Walter White, this genius who never lived up to his potential in his younger years, getting diagnosed with cancer, and then he goes to cook meth to support his family before he dies. Like, that's an interest. That's a really cool concept. Like, even off the just off the bat, he works with a former student of his, Jesse Pinkman. I'm sure, any adult really li who's listening to this probably is at least aware of the show, if not having watched it themselves. If you haven't watched it, change that. it's got award-winning performances. It won consistently while it was on the air. A great cast and some of the best writing I've ever seen in television. Breaking Bad was definitely worth investing time into for me. And I've even watched the sequel film El Camino, which I enjoyed. I liked. I didn't. While I probably wouldn't agree with everything that happened in the movie, I liked how it ended up turning out. I'm yet to watch Better Call Saul, but I've heard really good things, and I will get to that. But yeah, Breaking Bad is a fantastic series, and I'm definitely glad I spent time with it. And the seasons aren't even that long, so if people are wondering, oh, is it 20 episodes? And like, no, it's at most it's like 16, I think, for the longest season. So yeah, Breaking Bad definitely has my recommendation. With all the shows that are just seemingly created to promote a message nowadays, it is fantastic when you just get a show that wants to tell a good story. And for me, an example of this that we had recently was Superman and Lois. This is a spin-off from the Arrowverse. This is a Superman that initially made his appearances in the Supergirl TV series, same with Lois Lane. And this takes place after the events of Crisis on Infinite Earths, the big crossover. So we are in a new reality where all these heroes exist in the same world. But I'm glad that they didn't include anybody else. This show is confirmed for a second season as of right now. So I don't know whether they're going to include anybody else, but this show was so fun. It was really good to watch, and it's based off of the Superman series that I read initially, which was really fun for me. It was based off of Tomasi and Gleason's run on Superman Rebirth from 2016, and this show was mainly controlled by HBO, which meant it had a bit of a higher budget, and there was less people with a message working on the show. And while it's not completely absent from that stuff, it's not at the forefront, which I appreciated. The show follows Clark and Lois moving back to Smallville to raise their two teenage sons, and also having to contend against mysterious threats that seek to irreversibly change their lives. Tyler Hoechlin and Bitzi Tulloch both really embody their characters, and I was very happy to, because Tulloch had previously played Lois in one or two crossovers, namely Elseworlds and Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I was a fan of hers from Grimm. Her and her husband were the two lead actors in that show. So she's great. I was happy when she was cast as Lois Lane. And Tyler Hoechlin, he's a great Clark Kent. I love him as Clark Kent. His Superman, I was really not sure about, because whenever he had shown up, he was always in the background. Like, this is Superman. He's supposed to be at the forefront. He's the leader, you know? And granted, in the Arrowverse, it made sense for Oliver Green Arrow to lead people, but you know, it's like, again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it's like anytime there was a female character in the room, Superman would like kind of take a step back and like do everything that they say. And it's, I don't know, it's basically, this is his time to shine, him and Lois, and they both, they, everyone that was aware of the show coming out that I would kind of know about or talk to was nervous that it was going to be Lois and Superman, you know, it was going to be more about her and he would be in the background. But no, it is very well spaced out for both of them, and introducing their two teenage sons, Jonathan and Jordan being their names. They are split kind of sides of the Jonathan Kent character from Superman Rebirth. And I love Jonathan in Superman Rebirth. He is such a cool character. He's a kid growing up with Superman for a dad and Pulitzer Prize winning reporter Lois Lane for a mom. And he's half Kryptonian, so his powers are not exactly consistent in the early days. You know, some days he'll get hit with something and he'll be fine. Other days he'll fall out of a tree and hurt his arm or something like that. You know, it's good. But Jonathan and Jordan are both well developed characters as of so far. One is more athletically gifted, whereas the other one has suffers from anxiety. And while I was initially frustrated with Jordan being the one with anxiety, because he is visually meant to look more like Jonathan and from the comics, I grew to, you know, appreciate this character for who he was. He's just, he, you know, it's not going to be a direct adaptation, which I think is always something that fans of a certain property are always concerned about. But overall, I thought they were both very good. Both actors gave a great performance. I really want the show to come back soon, because for me, it was just so fun each week, sitting down, getting the new episode, sitting there for 40 odd minutes, just having a blast, because the world isn't exactly cheery all the time, you know? And then you have this weekly show that's bright, colorful, you know, has good intentions behind it. It's not criticizing anybody. It's not putting any people down for what they believe in. It's just a show that's trying to make you feel good. And I highly recommend that. If you like comic book stuff, or even if you just like a good family story and you want something positive, I would recommend Superman and Lois. It spans 15 episodes for the first season, and if I had one problem with the series, is that it took breaks in between the episodes, and not the problem being that it took breaks, but the breaks that it took would last for at least a month, then this would kind of kill the momentum, mainly with audiences, say over in America, who would be watching this show at a certain time slot each week. And then the show would go away for a month, and say Supergirl would take its place, and people were like, I say this because I was following the numbers on, I follow YouTube channels, like Az from Heel versus Babyface, for example, who cover the numbers of these shows, that like the viewing numbers. And generally, just this, you know,
they'd do a couple episodes and then the momentum would be kind of halted by the breaks. And overall, that was really my only problem with this. So yeah, definitely, I would definitely recommend Superman Lois, and I cannot wait for season two. Speaking of Superman, there's always been this, idea of the, oh, what if Superman was evil type thing. And it's a very played out trend the last couple of years. But what also I find interesting is these characters who are clearly meant to be Superman analogues, but that aren't evil. They're not exactly the pinnacle of, superherodom like Clark, but I recently came across this series, well, within the last year or so, mainly because it was being adapted into a Netflix series. But I have read the original book and I'm trying to get my hands on the rest of the series because I, for one, really enjoyed it. And that series was called Jupiter's Legacy. This was actually number one, like the number one streamed show for a week, and then Netflix cancelled it, which makes no sense. The show and the book are quite different, but I enjoyed both of them for that. I think the show, it's trying to set up this world and, explain how people got their powers and stuff like that. So the show takes two approaches. One is the current day situation, and then you have the backstory, and I will explain those a bit in a moment. But like the show, granted, it doesn't have the best CGI. It doesn't have, it's there is some flaws for sure. But I, for one, really liked the idea of where it was going. And having read the book, the first five issues, which collect the first volume, they shoot past where the show currently was, or is, however you want to describe it. The origins of the team of the show, which I'll get into in a second, are explained over bit by bit over a few chapters, but by the end of issue three, we are years ahead of where the show is. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Anyway, for those that don't know, Jupiter's Legacy focuses on a world filled with superheroes, the pinnacle of which is the Utopian and his group known as the Union of Justice. Initially, this consisted of the Utopian, who was in his personal identity known as Sheldon Samson, his wife, who goes by Lady Liberty, and his brother, known as Brainwave, and a few of their other friends who were granted their powers by an alien force, which in neither the TV show nor the book do they explicitly tell you what that is, as far as I know. They're gifted abilities far beyond any mortal man. They all kind of have a base kind of, strength to some degree, flight. The Utopian is the chief among them in terms of this, but there's certain of the characters who favor other abilities, like the Flayer, who is kind of like their version of the Flash. Over a century later, following their gifting of these powers, their children do not live up to what they are expected to be. In the books, this is that they are both Samson children are disappointments. Brandon is not able to live up to his father's expectations. He, goes out to parties. He doesn't take himself seriously and things like this, whereas his sister Chloe takes any endorsement deal she can. She very much lives a party girl lifestyle. This is the case in the series as well, whereas in the series on Netflix, Brandon is actually trying to be a consistent superhero, but he's just not quite there yet. And it is interesting because the Utopian is trying. I think he's more sympathetic in the TV show from what I've seen so far.
Whereas in the books, he's kind of resigned himself to just being disappointed in his kids. Not to say that there's not depth to this character in the books, from what I can tell, but he's very much in the twilight years of his superhero career, and he wants to be sure that there's going to be someone there after him to take care of people. And the Union of Justice go by a code. And basically, this code, without quoting it verbatim, it basically means that they don't kill people. They should, they show mercy. They live to serve the public, or it's more explicitly said in the book, to serve the government, like the elected government of the people. But not everyone agrees with this. Some of the younger heroes, they think that, all this restraint and old-fashioned moral guidelines, they don't apply when the villains are out for blood, and I think there's a very interesting video on YouTube by a channel called Foundation for Economic Education, and it basically goes into the moral implications of the code and not following this, which basically, amounts to, that is the idea, to have restraint and to not actively be judge, jury, and executioner, because then at the end of the day, how does that make you better than the people you were supposed to be stopping? I absolutely do not want to give away any serious spoilers, so I won't be getting into how things change quickly in the book or the ending implications of the first season, but I would recommend watching it for sure. It is 8 episodes, I believe, and if you want to pick up the book, they've renumbered the series because of the Netflix one, which is making it difficult to find the books in the order that I want at the moment, because I initially picked up the original printing version, where the first book that was ever created from the series, it says book one. But unfortunately, in the reprinted version, that is now book three, which is a bit of a pain. So either if you wanted to read the book, you could pick up the new printed version from Netflix with the renumbering, or you could just look online, which is what I'm trying to do at the moment, to pick up the order of the series the original way, because I'm stubborn like that. But I should mention the series was created by Mark Miller or Mark Millar. Who knows how to pronounce that name, because I actually I got a like from Mark Millar before on a previous episode of this podcast on the Instagram page, which was really cool. So I hope I'm not pronouncing your name wrong, sir, if you are listening to this. But people kind of go back and forth. But he's the writer behind Kick-Ass, Kingsman, Marvel Civil War, a few other good comics, Old Man Logan. He also did the Ultimates, a few other series like that. But if you like Mark Millar's stuff, you'll probably like Jupiter's Legacy, I would say. Especially the Netflix series, because I'm not that far into the comic books. It asks very interesting questions, and I think the second season would have explored a lot of more of that, but unfortunately we're not seemingly getting that. So Jupiter's Legacy, I think it's one of the better examples that I've come across of the Superman archetype story, I guess you could say, or the Superman recreation. It's also got this interesting aspect that I mentioned earlier on about how these characters have been alive for over a century, and they're not, they're not who they once were, and they're trying to make sure that the world isn't going to be left in shambles before they go. So, which I think that's interesting in itself, I think. So if my rambling pitch has sold you on Jupiter's Legacy, go check it out. One of the particularly good Marvel comics that I have read in recent years has been Al Ewing's The Immortal Hulk. And I have 2 volumes left of this series, as of recording this episode, left to read. I haven't been able to get my hands on them just yet, but I think probably the best way to describe it is that it's a diamond in the manure pile that is modern Marvel Comics. There's really less than a handful of other currently ongoing Marvel comics that I could say are close to as enjoyable as the Immortal Hulk. The initial premise really is that during the day, a newly resurrected Bruce Banner post the events of Civil War II, for those of you who don't know, in the second Civil War comic, Bruce Banner asked Hawkeye to kill him if it ever looked like he was going to turn into the Hulk again. And he basically had an arrow through put through his skull. So Bruce is back from the dead, and during the day he is wandering the world in following a sensation in his head or a headache that leads him to various gamma-related monstrosities. But at night, it is his time, the Hulk's time, and this Hulk is not the one you know, not the savage, not the childlike rampage embodied. This is the Devil Hulk. He is smart, resourceful, and with a plan to change the world as we know it. Along the way, the reader will come to see characters from the Hulk series from years gone by in new terrifying forms. Characters such as Doc Samson, Walter Langowski, known as the Sasquatch, particularly Elizabeth Ross. Bruce Banner's wife and daughter of General Thunderbolt Ross. She is very interesting in the series. Without giving anything else away, the series goes to places that are tremendously epic. Be it inside the mind of Banner with all the different Hulks that live there, which was a really cool concept that we've seen explored a couple of times, but not to this degree. But I suppose, comparatively speaking, I'll just say this. A fight with the Avengers is a small part of the series. Speaking of the Avengers, the often contested strongest Avenger with Hulk, Thor. Jason Aaron's run on Thor was something I've, been reading for the last couple of years. I'd pick up each book when I could. I remember I picked up the first volume. Jeez, I think it was 2018. I picked it up along with Jason Aaron's first volume of Avengers and the first volume of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. And within the last year or two, I finally finished the series with the final book, King Thor. And his series spanned several years, and while I didn't read the Jane Foster portion of the story where she had become Thor, I was aware of what happened during that time, like through YouTube videos and other things that I'd heard. But me particularly, I wanted to read the story of Thor and not anyone else using his name as a mantle. The story of a god that spans his time. Going into battle with Vikings all the way to his days as an Avenger in our modern time, all the way up till the end and the revival of all things. The War of the Realms that occurs, that is seemingly inevitable, spurred on by Malekith, who, unlike his depiction in the Dark World film in 2013, the books would actually have you believe he is a credible and at times very intimidating threat. I'm not even joking, folks. He's a very good villain in the series. The journey of Thor Odinson, King of Asgard, probably warrants an episode in itself, where I can really delve into the details. So I'll probably get to that eventually. Maybe I'll reread the series so I can do that, make notes along the way. I have the first book of Donny Cates' run on Thor, which is the follow-up series. I haven't read it yet, but I've heard really good things. But for me, Jason Aaron's Thor was an experience for me. I was reading it and enjoying pretty much every book. We go from the first two books that have kind of a one arc, and the beautiful art by Asad Ribic, which is crazy. I mean, like those first two books, just to kind of give you the gist of it, there is a threat that is semi-recurring in the series, I guess you could say, and it takes the young Thor, the Avenger Thor, and the old King Thor to team up to fight it, and that is just awesome to see. And then we go further on into the unworthy Thor part of the story, which was cool, all the way into kind of the lead up to the War of the Realms. And let's kind of just say, the lead up to the War of the Realms, the art by, I believe it's Mike Del Mundo, is so good. It is very reminiscent of Thor Ragnarok, that vibrant Jack Kirby-esque color extravaganza, I guess is what you could call it. So if you like the look of Thor Ragnarok, like that kind of primary color visual style, that portion of the series will definitely be to your liking, I'd say. And then all the way to King Thor, which is the grand finale at the end of all things. But I will talk about Jason Aaron's Thor another time. I'm looking into, as well as Donny Cates' Thor, because I granted I have the first book, so I may as well read it soon. But I'm looking into other Thor series possibly to read, because I really enjoy the character. I think he's been criminally underused in the MCU. There's so much potential with that mythology. But I think maybe, like, I was debating about J. Michael Straczynski's Thor, because that is kind of in the years before Jason Aaron's one, where the Asgard comes to Earth and stuff like that. So I think if I do that, I'll discuss more of that on here. But I'll try and work on an episode for Jason Aaron's Thor one and why I like it so much in the near future, hopefully. I remember in summer of 2016, a new comic book show was coming out that I had an interest in. It was going to be on AMC, and my dad and I, we watched this show for 3 years, 3 of the 4 years it aired together, and the fourth we weren't in the same place when it was on, so we had to watch it separately. I'd heard how great the book was, so I think it was it probably wasn't too long after the series wrapped up that I started getting into the books. And this series was Garth Ennis's Preacher. And I picked up the first volume, or the first book, I should say, because they're labeled as books 1 through 6. But I picked up the first book and it blew me away. It was such a fun read. The colors, the oh my God, the late great Steve Dillon, his art was fantastic. It fit the series perfectly. And this series came out the 90s, I believe. Like I would say it was. Some people have said the 80s, but I think it was the 90s. I really should have just double checked that, but I remember picking up the first book, and then I think within probably a couple of months, I don't know exactly time wise, but I read all six, and it was I think I finished the series around the early stages of all the lockdowns, and I can firmly say the books are better than the show. I do love the show, I will admit that. But in hindsight, the show barely scratched the surface of everything the books had. For example, the final season of the TV show, there's a whole storyline that basically takes up the bulk of the final season, where there's this massive fortress type place in the desert, and they're trying to rescue one of their friends and stuff like this. But that is the finale, more or less, of the show, or the final lap of the show, I should say. Whereas that's like book two in the series, the original. I'll admit though, there are one or two things in the show that I do prefer over the books, namely
the Irish vampire Cassidy, who was one of the main three characters of the series. I prefer him in the show over the book because he's definitely more sympathetic and sincere. And while he does do some dark shit, he doesn't go nearly as bad as the books, because in the books he does some downright evil stuff, and for me it like I couldn't really, and maybe I'll feel different on a second read through, but I couldn't really get past the things he had done with looking at his character after that point. But in the show I thought he was definitely better. Jesse and Tulip in the show, the romantic side of the show, the couple, they are definitely good in the show, but the book versions are still better. For me, I would definitely say that I would recommend Preacher to anybody who wants to get into Garth Ennis's work. It's the first thing I would recommend off the top of my head. Secondly would be Punisher Max. I am reading that at the moment. Well, I have the first two books. I've read the first one. I'm yet to read the second one, but it is really good. Namely, the initial few chapters of the first book where it shows Frank in Vietnam, which was really, really good. I would definitely say I like Preacher compared to some of Garth Ennis's other stuff, like The Boys. I love the Boys TV show, but the book is something I don't think I'm ever gonna get into, because, well, I won't read it. I might like look at stuff about it on like YouTube or whatever, but I'm not gonna go out and spend money on the book series, because it for me, while Preacher and Punisher and stuff, they have shock value parts, there's always kind of a reason to it, whereas the book of The Boys seems to be just shock value for shock value's sake, and just being downright dark. And me personally, that's not my type of thing. If it is yours, go ahead, enjoy the book. But for me, I like the show, especially with characters like Homelander and Billy Butcher, who have quickly grown to be very much some of my favorite comic book characters. On TV, just to see what's going to happen with them. And they definitely go to an extent to humanize both of them, but in the books, from what I know, there's not much of that human character left. But yeah, Preacher, fantastic read. Six books collected, from at least that's how I read it. Definitely worth a shot if you have the time and the money that you want to spend on that. There are creatives that I am quite a big fan of, but one of the most recent ones in the last few years is Mike Flanagan. I didn't realize, but I'd actually seen two of his films before, not knowing it was the same guy that did those movies, 2013's Oculus and 2017's Gerald's Game. But it was really in 2018 when myself and a lot of people caught on to how good this guy is at horror, with 2018's Netflix series The Haunting of Hill House. Hill House was amazing. It was on several different levels, it's very, very good. It was layered with both thematic content and very rich characters. Using both of these, Hill House explored connections between individuals and family that last even after we ourselves have passed on, and how some places are impacted by the events that have occurred there, that the damage can never really be undone. I, for one, love this series. I've watched it at least 4 or 5 times over the last couple of years, and I could definitely see myself going back to it in the future. It's just really good. But the Haunting Anthology is probably the best way to describe this. Continued with The Haunting of Bly Manor,
And while this was entertaining, it probably wasn't what not only myself but fans of horror were looking for, because it's more of a gothic romance than anything else, and that is perfectly fine if you're going into it for that. I think it works for that. I haven't revisited the series, I've been meaning to, but I look at it more as a story about living, taking chances on love and happiness rather than holding on to the worst things in life like tragedy and pain and things that hold you back. I think in that sense the show, along with its gothic romance storyline, works very well in that perspective. But if you're going into it for a pure horror experience, you might be a little bit disappointed. So if you like romance and dark subject matter, that is definitely the way to go into it. But in current year, we have Midnight Mass, the story of a community falling apart and being ruined, and generally also a story about how religion is used as a shield, protecting us against not only things that seek out our corruption, but also how it's used as a scapegoat for committing horrible acts and saying, "It was for God," or "God made me do it." Characters quote scripture to make right their experiences or even their own acts of horrid violence. I would personally rank these in the order of Hill House, Midnight Mass, then Bly Manor. I definitely recommend Flanagan's 2019 film Doctor Sleep. It is a I personally found it incredible. It's a sequel to The Shining. It's semi a mixture of a sequel to the film and the book. It follows an adult, Danny Torrance, as he helps a young girl with similar abilities to his own to try and survive being hunted by a group of vampiric ghouls. It's probably the best way I can describe them. And they are led by the charismatic Rose the Hat, who's supposed to be Irish, which is very fun. Yes, the I'm really looking forward to where Mike Flanagan is going next. I've heard he's adapting James Tynion novel, which or graphic novel, I should say, which I'll get into in a minute. But Hill House, fantastic. Bly Manor, really good, and Midnight Mass was certainly my preferred over Bly Manor for sure. But yeah, Hill House, Midnight Mass, Bly Manor. And the last thing I'm going to talk about today is The Department of Truth, which is a new comic book by James Tynion IV that was recommended to me by a friend of mine in the comic book shop I go to the most, Sub City Comics in Dublin. So if you're ever in Dublin, be sure to check that out. This series is about a man named Cole who is recruited into something called the Department of Truth, which is an organization that prevents changes in the real world that can come about when too many people believe in conspiracy theories, spanning things like the Flat Earth theory, JFK's assassination, and the Satanic Panic of the late 20th century. This was recommended to me because I like things like the X-Files, and I generally like to think outside of the social norm. So that, people would label that as conspiracy theories, unfortunately, but yeah, so I like that type of stuff. So, and by God, was it a good recommendation? The series has been really good so far. I've read the first volume. It hooked me by the end of the first issue, and I read through the rest immediately afterwards. I have the second volume. I haven't read it yet because I'm taking a little bit of a break, trying to read a few other things, but I will be getting back to it very soon. Yes, so this is an ongoing series at the moment, as far as I know, so it's still coming out either weekly or monthly. I'm not sure of the exact schedule, but I read it in volumes anyway, so I'll wait till it's collected. So if you like dark series with mysterious organizations and very dark subject matter, definitely check out James Tynion IV's The Department of Truth. And And I think that's going to just about do it for today, folks. I'm going to try to get the second half of this episode out soon, where I talk about, from my own perspective, the things in pop culture and comic books that I don't necessarily fully agree with. I'm going to talk about the good and the bad involved, so it won't just be all doom and gloom and depressing. If you're a new listener here, I really hope that you enjoyed this episode and it has convinced you to listen further. To my previous listeners, I hope this has been a welcomed return to the norm and maybe a little bit of an improvement. I hope that you, your family, your friends, and everyone around you are doing well. And please get involved with the social media. Gotta promote a little bit, you know. State of the Multiverse on Instagram. I will have polls up there after this episode is put up where you can get involved with the stuff I mentioned earlier on. And if this is at a later date and those are no longer up, please, if you have any questions or want to just get involved, just message on Instagram, State of the Multiverse, as I said, and I will be happy to answer your questions or see if you have any recommendations or something you want to hear on the podcast going forward. I will work on a few ideas that I have to hopefully have guests on in the future. I will update you on that once I know more. So until then, I've been your host, Reese, and you've been listening to the State of the Multiverse.